I've been waiting a long time to take you on a ride like this. Sit back, relax, but listen up. I got something to say. Hit me.
Now that you got me in your stereo, pump me till your tweeters blow. No reason I should hold it back now. It's time that I let it all hang out. Used to think that God was all about fear. Give him to, that's what I would hear. Be like this, boy, you should be ashamed. Who told you there was power in your own name?
If there was a line,
I crossed it.
You had it by.
Well, I knocked it.
Now, the rest of this show will be devoted to what I think is a very fun interview with one of my favorite new artists, Levi Kreiss. And in a way, this is also an unusual interview because it's my second one with him. I've very rarely done second interviews on Queer Music Heritage. The first appeared on my January of 2006 show, and I think it was a very interesting one. I encourage you to check that out on my site. But to kind of set the stage, in the first interview, he told us about the struggles he went through being raised Southern Baptist. He was on his way to becoming a Christian artist, but that nasty old homosexuality got in the way. And he ended up spending 6 years in an ex-gay program, before graduating as a full-fledged queer. He moved to L.A. and found opportunities in both singing and acting, and got involved in the play Southern Baptist Sissies, one of the creations of playwright Del Shores. And things have been both up and down. A down, which was probably a blessing, was being dropped by Atlantic Records. I consider it a blessing because if he had not been dropped, he would not have released in 2005 an album on his own called One of the Ones. I think that is an amazing album and was one of my favorites of that year. Now he's just come out with a new album, very different, and I just love it. So I couldn't resist having him back on Queer Music Heritage. Okay, I've brought you up to date, and you've already heard a little of one of the songs from the new album. The new album has a title that's a bit tongue-in-cheek. It's called The Gospel According to Levi, and I began the interview by asking him to tell me about the album.
Well, one review I've gotten already has said that the album is hook-driven and genre-bending, and I love that. But what is neat to me is that, finally, here's a project that where I've allowed myself to confront the issues presented to me by my history with the church. And hopefully it's as much loving as it is confrontational, but certainly this album allows me to put the past to bed.
Now that you've told me that, is there an overall message you want this album to get across?
You know, I think if I want this album to accomplish anything, it would be to leave the listener with a suggestion that, you know, in a world of so many different belief systems, you know, we're so inclined to think that our way is the right way. But, you know, maybe perhaps our way is just another way, and that we need to allow for the journeys of other people and how they ever interpret that. And see it as equally as divine, I believe, is important, because at the end of the day, I don't think that we can even fulfill the greatest commandment that Jesus Christ gives us, love our neighbor as ourself, if deep within we really believe that this other person is wrong and I am right. And if you don't think or believe the way I do, you're wrong. So hopefully the album kind of suggests to make room for everyone's belief system.
Do you expect to get any controversy about this album?
I would imagine that I will run into that at some point. Yeah. So far it's been well received. I've been very surprised. I have had responses on MySpace from people who got to know me through the last album, and these were Christian folks that maybe heard from me from The Apprentice. You know, they have more of a conservative demographic, and I've received people putting Bible verses on my MySpace page and commenting about you know, my confronting the church and how unfair that is, and a few emails of people that are praying for me now. So, yeah, it's going to ruffle a few feathers, I think, probably.
Well, that's not bad.
Maybe not. You know, if it causes us to think, that's all I want to do, you know.
Since your last album got such acclaim, did you have difficulty in deciding the musical direction of the new album? So many artists follow up an acclaimed album with a cookie-cutter version of it.
This is true. You know, I like to approach an album oftentimes more as a songwriter than as an artist who wants to stay within a confined stylistic place. As I was looking at the lyrics for this album, I wanted to avoid making it kind of masturbatory and a little... I don't want to make it too dark. And so I found myself trying to find a style that would interpret that lyric in the most upbeat, hooky, positive way. And oftentimes that ended up meaning that one song sounds more R&B and the next song sounds more rock and roll. And I just kind of let that be what it was. And I think probably from this project forward, I would imagine my next album is going to be more of a defined stylistic statement. But for me, it was about how do I translate the lyrics musically and make them work for this project, you know?
Do you think it may be incongruous to have a dark subject conveyed with hooky melodies?
Yeah, I mean, I was experimenting with that because I wanted to convey my message in a way that people didn't feel beat over the head with it. Maybe they could walk away singing the song 30 times before they realized what I was saying underneath a hooky, upbeat, fun sound. And maybe it was a way for me to slide in my message, you know, through the back door so that maybe it was heard after someone has played it because they like the sound of it. And then they realize, oh, wow, he's talking about 9/11 in the first verse of this song. He's talking about the Protestant Catholic conflicts in Northern Ireland. Oh my gosh, I was just singing along and it was fun. You know, so I think a lot of that choice was to try to slide the message through the back door.
Well, while I would have absolutely loved another album like your last one, because I adore that album, I totally understand why you went this direction.
Oh, wonderful.
You had to, I think.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you know, I am a huge fan of artists like Tori Amos, and I enjoy how true she allows her music to stay to the heaviness of the lyric. But the lyrics for me were just so heavy already that I think I personally had to give myself something light musically to package it in, something that was easy to digest so that I could digest the lyrics a little easier.
Now, I had not given it a lot of thought ahead of time, but I was kind of surprised at how meaty it was.
Lyrically speaking?
Yeah.
I hope that it's not too much. You know, I think there's always that fine line of overdoing it and pushing your agenda on other people, and I certainly don't want to be that kind of artist. I want people to be able to take something and have their own interpretation of it, think for themselves, and process it in a way that makes sense to them in their world. So I hope that it still, even with the meaty lyrics, found a nice balance that people are capable of doing that with.
Oh, I definitely think it does. Let's get to one of the songs from the new album. Tell me about Bittersweet Salvation.
Oh, I would love to know what you think about Bittersweet Salvation.
I'm not the one being interviewed.
Well, you know, Bittersweet Salvation is probably the hardest song, I think, for people who might tentatively approach this new material because maybe they still believe in the theology of Christianity. Maybe they just have a healthy fear of God. You know, this is a song that flat out says, you told me that I was worthless and what I needed was to rely on this outside source to save me so that I could end up in this place in the future, and that I would have to behave like this and do this right and this right, and I can't mess up, and all these things, this legalistic structure that I was kind of forced to move through with such pain and coming out with so many scars. It was kind of my way of denouncing, quite honestly, that the church, and not so much Christ and not so much the theology of Christianity, but to denounce the lack of love.
There's a big difference between religion and church.
Yes, I think there is absolutely a big difference between religion and church. Actually, I think they're more similar than different, now that I say that, because spirituality to me is different than religion and church. I think that once a belief system becomes an organized religion, there are a lot of things that are embedded within the structure of that that is a part of it, that has to be a part of it. I would imagine for thousands of years, if you look at the history of the church, oftentimes that structure has been needed for Christianity to survive. So it's had its purpose, but it also doesn't reflect the fluidity and the individuality of everyone's journey, and how it's mine is different from yours and yours is different from hers, and it's okay to accept others outside of that structure. And that to me is what spirituality is, and religion always feels like you have to be in this box in order for us to recognize you.
Nothing good, what I find inside. You told me of redemption for such a worm as I. I threw myself upon the body of your Christ, abhorring all I was and all I felt inside. I held a standard in the saint that ever said. 3 hours of daily prayer didn't even clear my head. The book of law kept my young body trembling in its bed. Afraid to wake, to find my spirit dead.
You said he would save me.
Of what song on the new album are you the most proud?
Wow. That is a wonderful question, because it's just so different. I think probably I'm most proud of We're Okay, a song that I wrote for my mother, which that song began to write itself very quickly after being in Kentucky on tour with Eric Hyman. And I had been telling my family, my mom and dad, I would love for them to come and see what I'm doing now. It had been, you know, nearly 8 years since they had made an effort to come out and be part of what I do and sit in the audience and take it in and be there and support me. And they decided at the spur of the moment to just drive up from Tennessee, and they walked into this club, you know, it's a room full of, you know, gay guys or college girls and like all this sort of mix of people they would never be around. And it was that moment I realized they're finally making an effort and, you know, maybe we are going to be okay. Because it's been a big challenge, I think, for my fundamental Baptist family to really reach out. And they've done wonderful with the partnership and the marriage, and my mother's has been very acknowledging of Greg, and they've really come a long way now. But that song was kind of my way of saying, look, I recognize that you made that effort, and it's the start of something I think that we can mend, because I don't want my life to go by and not have a relationship with my family and continue to feel estranged from my family over this issue. It's just time that I start being a part of that family, of my family again, and us confronting these issues and working through them with love. And so that's kind of why I think that song is so important to me. And I've played it for my mother, and you know, she just bawled and cried. And I'm getting wonderful emails, JD, from other people who have gotten the pre-order, heard the song, played it for their mother, and it was kind of, it created a moment of conversation for them and bonding for them through that song. And that's exactly what I wanted to hopefully do through it, and hopefully it'll continue to do that, but it'll always have a special place in my heart.
It was so easy then. We were the best of friends. Those days of innocence are beautiful and kind. You held my little hand till I became a man. Must have been hard to watch me leave your dreams behind. But beliefs do what they're made to do, dividing those of different views. But I believe a love is big enough to cross the great divide. I'm trying to build this bridge and close the distance before time gets away. You're finally trying to do this, and I like thinking maybe we're okay. There's no one here to blame, just an unfamiliar thing. It's not important that we see things out of eye. I wanna laugh with you and hear what you're going through. And though you're happy for the joy that's in my life, so I'll do what I know to do, stay with you and talk it through. I don't think either one of us wants to be strangers anymore. I'm trying to build this bridge and close the distance before time gets away. You're finally trying to do this, and I like thinking maybe we're okay. And love is still the greatest truth, and love is what'll get us through. Yeah, I'm trying to build this bridge and close the distance before time gets away. Maybe we're okay. I'm trying
Did your association with the play Southern Baptist Sissies influence the direction of your music?
It certainly provided me with a sounding board of people who have gone through the same type of experiences. And as I began to sit down and look at lyrics like Bittersweet Salvation and The Reckoning, I wanted to know that people who have had the same journey as myself instantly relate to what I'm trying to convey. So, you know, having the blessing of being in Del Shore's world and on tour with Southern Baptist Sissies, and the fact that that subject matter draws people that have had the same journey and the same experiences to us to hear their stories, to hear where they're coming from, all that kind of served as fodder for me to be able to go back home and pick up my pen, sit down at the piano and write, and to keep all those things in mind for me. It helps a lot.
It kind of gives voice to some of the people who may not have it.
Absolutely. For I didn't have that voice for myself. And if music and writing wasn't just therapy for me, then, you know, maybe someone out there wouldn't have that voice to speak for them. But now, luckily, Dell's out there doing that. And there's a lot of avenues where people can really, I think, hear someone addressing their experience and be able to associate themselves with that and maybe work through some healing for themselves, you know, hopefully.
Tell me about the song Stained Glass Window.
You know, after seeing Southern Baptist Sissies 36 times, after discovering the play, of course, you know, Dale Shores invited me to see it as many times as I needed to see it to kind of put the pain of the past behind me, and I took him up on it, and I went every week until I began to feel a sense of understanding as to my own journey and going through 6 years of reparative therapy to become straight, and, you know, growing up a preacher, evangelical boy, going to a different church every weekend, and, you know, singing and preaching. And I was sitting at my house after seeing it for that last time during that year. Of course, I've seen it now countless times being on the road with him. Sat down at my piano and tried to just put a period on the end of that experience for me. It was my own effort to create something that said, you know what, this is what I make of this now. You know, drawing from Dell's monologues in the play, letting that color the lyrics, kind of combined my experience of the play with my own experience of and my own desire to just put that past behind me and write a song that capsulizes what I believe this content to mean in the play and what I believe my own journey to be. So it was a release for me, and I remember being back over at Dell's house, and I think I was hanging out with his kids or something. And it's like, Dale, have you ever heard this song that I wrote after seeing your play? And he's like, well, no, play it for me. And I just sat there and played it, and he just kind of stopped what he was doing and looked and said, you know what? Maybe this is the theme song. You have to sing this after every show. And ever since then, I've barely missed a show.
Are you going to record it any differently for the soundtrack?
It is already recorded for the soundtrack. We have a wonderful studio version that has not been made available for sale to the public, but we have it in the can, and we're ready to use it. It's done.
How different is it?
it's very churchy. I mean, you've got the, you know, the church organ, and you got the gospel choir behind me, and it's just, it sounds very large. Much different than just, you know, the intimacy of me being at the piano and doing it on Rough Around the Edges. You know, I've got a whole, you know, team behind me of singers and wonderful players that just really, I think, brought the bigness of it to life.
For your new album, you resurrected a song from your Rough Around the Edges album. Was that a hard or an easy process?
It was an absolutely enjoyable process. You know, I've been singing Standing Tall in my shows for 7 years, and it was wonderful to have that on that the live CD, Rough Around the Edges, which we don't have, you know, it's not been manufactured anymore, and I don't have it available for people, but that was one of the big reasons why I went back and did that song, because I don't have it available on any other CD right now, and because for me, I've always liked to end my shows with that. I've always liked to leave it on a really positive note, and that song, for me, did that very well. So... Yeah, it was good to have it available, I think, to people. But it was a completely enjoyable experience, too, to be able to sit down and just do that exactly like I would do it live.
So that CD is kind of a collector's item.
Yeah, it is.
How many did you make?
How many of Rough Around the Edges did I make?
Uh-huh.
I would have to say roughly 1,500, maybe 2,000.
That's a good amount, really.
Yeah. Well, and that's how many I had sold. And, you know, at that time, I was making them off of my own computer in my house and burning them myself and putting the insert into the J card myself and printing out the labels. And it all came straight from my home computer and straight to the show and selling them mostly through Southern Baptist Sissies. At that time, I was singing after every performance. I think that was like probably 2002. So, yeah, every one of them was made with my own hands to get out there and just make a little bit of money, grocery money at the time, you know, just as a means of survival.
From your last album, I enjoyed the song With You, and it shows up again on this album in a little different form.
With You, I wanted to put on this new album, The Gospel According to Levi, because, you know, some babies you have are just more special than others, you know, and as a songwriter, there are songs that I've always wanted to kind of give them a shot to be heard in the best light possible. And With You was on one of the ones, and of course, it was a more intimate take and maybe a little more internal of an interpretation. But I really wanted to give this song another chance to be what I initially heard it to be as a songwriter when I wrote it. I initially heard it having a bigger chorus and a fuller sound and really having this soaring sensibility about it. So I just had to go back and do it again, you know. That was a choice completely disconnected from trying to make a consistent content of the album. All the other songs are very decisively chosen to continue a theme. Contextually, this was just kind of like for my own sheer enjoyment. I just wanted to hear this song in the way I originally heard it in my mind writing it. And I also found that there wasn't a lot of people who I think gravitated towards With You on the last album, because I Should Go was instantly gravitated towards because of Days of Our Lives and Hardly a Hero, the same thing with Young and the Restless. And so With You just kind of sat there between the two of them and never really, I think, found its place. And so I kind of wanted to give it another shot to see where it sticks. And hopefully, I think, by the way that we've produced it this time, I'd love to get some radio airplay with that now, because I really just think that a more top 40 approach to its production fits the song. I hope. It was a fun experiment to do anyway, and it was thoroughly enjoyable, much like doing Standing Tall again.
I used to be the life of the party, the man of the hour, the one in control. Never a question, no hesitation. Get who I want, and then I'd move on. But you've stolen my thunder, taken me under for something so real. With you, the light of an angel, you may be all I've been dreaming of. And I know the lies of infatuation, and I'd be surprised if this isn't love. Cause I just wanna break through, reach out and feel you falling to me, yeah. With you I can't hardly breathe. I'm a
I'm a fatherless boy who's never felt something like this. Oh, yeah, it's just how it is. With you, I can't speak. I can't move. I can't hardly breathe. I'm a fatherless boy who's never felt something like this.
You've had a pretty good year. Let me recap what I see from where I sit. You're nominated for 3 Out Music Awards, you tour with Eric Hyman, your songs have been used in soap operas, and you already have a new album, which I think is terrific.
I feel blessed, JD, I do. And to top it off, I can tell you something even better. I got married 2 weeks ago.
Wow. Like civil union or?
Our domestic partnership, me and my now husband, Greg, went to City Hall in West Hollywood, and the mayor married us, and we signed the domestic partnership, which in the state of California is every bit as legal as a marriage. Brought his mother and a couple of our close friends, and we did it. So the whole holiday season has been kind of a honeymoon.
Well, since you're in a relationship, how has that affected your songwriting?
Well, it seemed like immediately after finding this relationship, the songs started pouring, you know, and of course one of them ended up on the new album, The Gospel According to Levi, a song called You Found Me, after going through 3 years of dating so many people, so many guys, that created one of the ones, because I wrote about all of them. I had moved back to L.A. from New York, and I was just kind of done with dating. I was like, I have all these series of 2-month relationships and 4-month relationships, and I just can't find what's compatible with me. And, you know, this guy was walking his dog by my apartment one afternoon, and yeah, we talked, and sure, he came by a second or third time, but I was not going to invest my energy in doing this all over again when I was just convinced it was not going to work. So he had the patience of Job with me. Or is that the patience of Moses? I don't remember. but he was, yes, all in all, he was a very patient man and just stood there in front of me and offered his friendship and his love until I got a clue and realized that everything I had been looking for was standing right in front of me and I needed to get on it. So it's really changed my life in such a positive way. You know, he really lifts me up to be a better person, and I hope that I do that for him.
I remember teasing you last year about lining up 10 more guys for the next album.
I know, I'm going to have to milk this one guy from now on for all of my material. He is my final muse.
Well, since Levi's partner Greg inspired the song, let's hear a little of You Found Me.
I never thought I was one of the lucky ones. Time can't find the beat.
ended a couple songs on soap operas last year. How did that come about, and can you measure the impact of it?
You know, that was such an exciting thing to discover. First Days of Our Lives, of course. You know, I wrote I Should Go, the song that ended up on Days of Our Lives. As you know, for a straight friend of mine, I developed a crush on, and we were very close. And, of course, I played the song for him eventually, and he was very, you know, flattered. And it was birthed out of my own very different experience than what Austin and Carrie's relationship on Days of Our Lives is. To find that that song apparently was written universal enough to apply to their relationship and other people's relationships was such a positive thing for me. Upon doing one of the ones, I thought, you know, here's my coming out album. I'm writing songs about guys. My fear is that I'm going to alienate the rest of the world because maybe they won't be able to relate their experiences to mine. And so I kept waiting to see if that would be the case. And when Days of Our Lives came along and used that as the theme song for Austin and Carrie's budding relationship, it was kind of just a nice sign for me to say, you know what, good, that's the point of, as a songwriter, I think it's very important to be able to write in a way that relates to everyone, that allows everyone to bring their own experience to it. So I was just thrilled to find that it could be used for, you know, for Days. And then when Young and the Restless came along, it was wonderful too. And it motivated me and gave me a positive feeling about how the rest of the world can take my music when it means something so specific to me and allow it to mean something completely different to them, and so much so that they can bring it to the nation and have people all receive it. So I was very, very jazzed about that.
Well, the second part of that question was, can you measure the impact of that?
Did your sales go up?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It really did make a huge difference. You know, The Apprentice was perfect to launch one of the ones with, and that helped me move so many units I couldn't keep up with them. And once Days of Our Lives hit too, and then, of course, the live performances on Soap Talk and, I mean, The Restless, and then back again on Soap Talk, it was something that really gave a fresh new wind midway through the life of the album, and brought it to a whole new group of people that began to appreciate my music in a different way.
Well, as a producer, you know, I could have had your album sent to me, but I pre-ordered it because I wanted to get that bonus CD that sounded so mysterious.
Oh, wow.
And I learned that they were the Atlantic tracks.
Yes, they were.
And I understand why they can't be broadcast, but do you have any comments about them?
You know, it's so funny going back to hear that bonus CD. I pulled it out to kind of make it available to the people who would pre-order. And as I listened to it again for the first time in what probably was a year and a half, 2 years ago when I made it, it was striking to me now. After a year of being an out artist, after a year of just laying my guts out and being honest about my journey, about the reparative therapy, about my journey with the church, about the men I have loved, it was shocking to me to go back and see how much they really were kind of putting me in the closet and grooming me to just, like, every song has got girl this and she's so fine in her mini skirt and this and that and the other, and I'm just like shocked that one song after the other, it was such a representation of what they were creating me to be, and that was a straight singer-songwriter, kind of little MTV heartthrobish kind of direction that they were trying to take me. That is hysterical for me to go back and hear that. And Greg can't even listen to it, my partner. He can't. He's like, it's just, I just know you as an out artist, and it's just weird to hear you be singing about some chick in a miniskirt.
I know. I listened to it, and it's like, well, gee, this is nicely produced. It's well done, but I didn't buy it.
You know, and that was another thing that struck me, JD, was the fact that it didn't feel genuine. At the end of the day, it didn't feel nearly as genuine.
No, it just, I wasn't convinced.
Yeah, yeah. I absolutely agree. And I think that was just because it wasn't tapping into the honesty of my own self. You know, there's a couple of songs on there that I am proud of course, So Much Justice and All Right. Everything's going to be all right, because that's just a flat-out positive song, you know, of just keeping the faith when everything around you is crumbling to the ground and you got to have some reason to think that it makes sense. And so I've always been fond of that song, and I hope that one day I can find that I can go back and re-record it, because those songs on the bonus CD are songs that I don't have the liberty to record again. At least not now, because once Atlantic recorded them, they have that locked down for a period of time. I'm not sure exactly how long, but those songs will stay on a bonus CD and not be able to be broadcast for a little while longer until I can maybe recut one or two of them.
You don't need their help.
Exactly. Screw them. I don't need their help.
You don't need their songs.
Yeah. And, you know, and I had to realize after the Atlantic thing that I can continue writing strong stuff, you know, like I thought, All Right and So Much Justice, and those things were like, gosh, how can I lose these songs? And it was a real lesson for me to say, look, no, don't put a limit on your creative ability. Just allow yourself to constantly keep writing, and knowing there's always going to be new and different and good stuff that comes out. And so it really made me, it forced me to realize the flow of writing and how to consistently create and not be tied into what you've already created and thinking you can't do that again.
The song In the Name of God is perhaps the most political song from the album.
This was the first song, and The Name of God was the first song that was created for this album. And it was birthed out of watching CNN and everything that's going on in our world right now, and how so many of our conflicts are religious-based, and how religious intolerance for thousands of years is something that we can't seem to let go of, and it keeps dividing us, and it keeps causing destruction and war and even death. So I wanted to take all the examples I possibly could and say, look, this is what a separatist consciousness, an exclusive mentality of religion will do for our society if we continue to perpetuate that. So I took the first verse, and I took it from the perspective of the guy who's driving the plane into the World Trade Centers. For him, he is doing this from his belief system, believing that his God will bring justice if he is a part of this act of the death of so many non-believers in his mind. And for him, it was a very sincere, spiritually committed choice. His anger was righteous. But look what it ended up being, such destruction. You look at the Protestant Catholic conflicts in Northern Ireland. This is what the second verse is based upon. Here you have a culture for thousands of years are still killing each other because they're Protestant, I'm Catholic, or vice versa. And, you know, the kind of things that we're doing to ourselves because we as a human race do not want to evolve past this is going to be the death of us. And, of course, I thought it was intriguing and fascinating when you look at history and you find that people have used scriptural references to prove that, for instance, women can't vote. It's in the Bible. You know, that I can have slaves. It's in the Bible. You can't marry other races. It's in the Bible, or other same sexes even, you know. And it was just amazed at how we take scripture, our own inspired book, our own sense of being right, and we hurt so many people. And that's exactly the irony of it. I wanted to take it from a very positive place and come up almost anthem-like and say, yeah, I'm doing this in the name of God, but it's kind of screwed up when you hear what's going on in the name of God. So hopefully that will translate to people who hear him.
That's probably the most political song, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
The truth, and my truth won't allow me to compromise. So I pray that I'm granted the power on the day that I level your towers, to see faith restored when your children die and be justified.
a struggle just to have your civil rights. No peace tonight. You kill my daddy and you call him a heretic. And now I got the upper hand and I'm keeping it. Won't faze me if a thousand more have to die. Cause I'm justified in the name of God. I'd do it in the name of God. In the name of God, yeah. I'd do it in the name of God. And I forbid you to marry other races. I won't allow you to marry same sexes. And I believe a woman doesn't have the right to vote.
I think the song Future Love is a grabber. Please tell me about it.
Absolutely. You know, Future Love was... I'll take it back. When I'm going to make an album that is that confrontational and spells out conflicts, that spells out the problem, I don't like when people spell out problems and they don't give a solution. And I knew that I needed a song on the album that gave a solution to the religious intolerance that is spoken of throughout this album. And a lot of the lyric of Future Love actually came to me from reading Conversations with God. Conversations with God has been a huge resource for me, coming where I have come from in the church and allowing my belief system to allow room for other people, for other people's belief system. And he talks about, you know, the human race being able to evolve, hopefully, to a place where we can allow room for others in their own interpretation of what their spiritual world is, whatever it is. And I just wanted it to be fun and be able to kind of a rally people together type of feel that says, look, it doesn't matter if we disagree. It doesn't matter if I call him God and you call him Allah. It doesn't matter if, you know, I go to church and you don't. You go to a Buddhist temple to meditate. None of that matters. What matters is love. What matters is unity. And I thought it was really important to put that on the album, knowing that the rest of the content is more about the conflict. You got to answer the conflict. You got to give people an answer, you know, at least my own personal answer anyway.
Open your eyes to the future, love. Open your eyes to the future, love. Hey!
Hey, oh. You're wrong. We're just two in a world of interpretations. So what's the point in me cutting you off?
There's a bigger picture, and the time is now. We need a new system if we're gonna find a common ground.
When I speak my mind, I do it with passion. But it's all good if your opinion's on mine. You see, there ain't no need to feel threatened. Let's talk about it. Let's give it a try.
Yeah, there's a bigger picture. The time is now. We need a new system if we're gonna find a common ground.
Everybody,
yeah.
Come together in a future love.
the future love.
Some artists think this far ahead. Do you know the musical direction your next album will take?
I'm already writing songs for my next album, actually. It's going to be all live band, as we will all record it together. More piano-driven, definitely top 40. The wonderful thing about The Gospel According to Levi is that I don't feel pressed like I have to say anything anymore. It's such a release for me to be able to put the past behind that I feel like this next project is going to be just about making good music that relates to everybody's experience, relationships or whatever, and just have a good time with it. So it's starting to kind of just find its way, and I think it's probably going to be very much more of a commercial album, certainly more consistent in style. But it's going to be stay within that piano-driven rock sound. We're going to get back to the piano on that one because, as you know, The Gospel According to Levi isn't very piano-heavy.
Would you shy away from lyrically gay material?
No, of course not. I mean, I think "Loving in a Leather Light" is definitely a choice I made for, you know, being able to say, to be true to my own experience and say something and not care if it's gay or not. I think for me, though, it's even more important, in my opinion. "Loving in a Leather Light" was a choice that was my experience. I used to be back in those bars with boys with no name. But outside of that, you take a song like "I Should Go" with its content about a straight guy. I think it's so important for artists to be able to create things that everyone can be brought together with. That this guy who has problems with his girlfriend, like this email that I had, where he heard "I Should Go" and he played it for his girlfriend, and they brought back together. I just want to build bridges to everyone. And I think if an artist can keep that in mind, and it's appropriate to make that artistic choice, and it's not compromising to who I am as a gay man, then I think that that's a good choice. I think if I run into some lyrics on this new album that have to be very expressive of and specific to me as a gay man, of course I'll write them.
You've been listening to my interview with Levi Kreis, and to find him on the net, you'll go to www.levikreis.com. That's L-E-V-I. K-R-E-I-S.com. I'm down to the last song, but before I get to it, I want to thank you all for listening, and I want to especially thank Beth Courant and Levi Kreis for the wonderful interviews. And, as I had expected, the interview was so good that I could not fit all of it into the radio version of this show, so my internet listeners could hear an extended version with a lot more comments and additional music. That, of course, can be found at www.queermusicheritage.com. And as always, if you have questions or comments about any of the music I featured, please write me at qmheritage@aol.com. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices on KPFT in Houston. You'll want to tune in next month for a special show on queer hip-hop music. But I've got one more question for Levi. Why did you choose to end your album with the song "It Is Well With My Soul"?
"It Is Well With My Soul" was a choice I made, being that it was important for me for this album to have a little bit of love for the church, put in there. I didn't want to just be, you know, confrontational with it. I didn't want to just talk about the problems that the church has and leave people with the impression that I am angry at the church or that I don't understand the importance of the church. The church has, in so many ways, has made me the man that I am today, and I honor that and respect that and need that still to a degree in my life. And I thought It Is Well With My Soul was a wonderful statement, because even though I believe differently than I used to, and I can't say that I adhere to the same theology that I once used to preach, but the truth of the matter is finding my own answers, finding my own interpretation for God, finding my own journey has made it so very well with my soul. And the peace that I feel now surpasses maybe the understanding of people outside of my belief system to say, well, I don't believe that you're a peaceful person because you're not believing the Bible and this and that. But I just wanted to say, you know, I take what the church has given me, and I want to kind of salute that, honor that, by doing a song that I grew up with that's a part of the church. And also, because of the words, reflects my present state. It is well. It is well with my soul. I just didn't want people to think that at the end of the day, I was angry at the church and I was a church hater and that I didn't honor the church. So that's why I wanted to put that song on there.
Attendeth my way, when sorrows are like sea billows roll. Whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well, it is well with my soul. It is well,
it is well
with my soul.
Yeah. eso.